Blog Talk Radio.
Morning, everybody. See, I didn't miss the cue that time. What's going on? It's good to be back. Last week was a little difficult to breathe and talk at the same time, so I had a minor surgery to do some cleaning up of my sinuses, and again, I couldn't breathe and talk at the same time, so I did my best to run the board and contribute whenever I could, and we got what we got. And we got it good. I appreciate you all for holding it down last week. It turned out really well, very well-received show. I didn't share that privately. I'm doing it publicly now, and I apologize. But, yeah, it was a very well-received show. So it just proves that you all don't need me around in order to make it happen, and I'm very appreciative of that. But, again, it's nice to be back. It's nice to have the gang together and doing what we do. Our brother Barry will be on in a second. Sister Rashi's already on with us, and waiting for Brother Rodney to hop on as well. Didn't know how to launch the show initially today until life started happening. The beautiful part of the show is, you know, we try to stay rooted in that principle. So what happened? First off, I'm in Virginia. It says my great uncle passed away, so here to say goodbye to him. Then our guest that we were talking to, I wanted him to be on, not necessarily this week, but I wanted him to be on soon because subject at hand is baseball. It's fall. It's October. My Orioles are winning. They clinched the AL East. I'm going to say that every damn time I get to say it. Yes, the Orioles, the Baltimore Orioles have clinched the AL East with over 100 wins. So it's definitely that time of the year. And this cat is a history maker with respect to baseball and the African-American experience. So wanted to bring the brother on. And he and I were talking yesterday, and he had a meeting to go to, and he said he would get back to me. A part of the meeting was estate planning that he went to. He shared that with me later and stuff, and it went a little longer than he thought. So I was like, okay, well, that's two, right? So the third thing was, as I'm driving today to get to VA, I'm listening to my rotation. So most of my music, I don't do the Apple stuff. I do Amazon. And Tribe, I'm not Tribe. Listen to me, goodness gracious. Why am I stuck on Tribe? De La Soul popped up. And if you're not familiar with the story or not, around this time last year, De La Soul was locked in a bitter battle with Tommy Boy and the other labels that they've been on through the years to get control of their royalty. And God willing, it was resolved before Dove One passed. Now, I'm thinking to myself, like, yo, that is just so on time that their songs are playing this morning while I'm thinking about estate planning based off yesterday, and I'm thinking about my uncle's funeral, right? And I say that because I've talked about this a number of times. You know, I don't think we talk about death enough. I think we make it too much of a stigma that when it happens, it's such a shock to the system that it causes rifts in the family. It causes us to behave in a manner that most of us would not normally behave in, but because it wasn't discussed on the front end, we take it, internalize it, and don't really know what to do with it. So instead of showing up, we show out. And unfortunately, that is not an extremely conducive behavior. And this is the things that tie up the fabric of the family when it doesn't necessarily have to. You know what I'm saying? So I said to myself, yo, that's the perfect opening for the show today. Because, again, this is not a topic that we've not touched on before, but it's something that I think we need to hear as often as we possibly can, because it's something that we need to do. We need to be about our business. You know, I've shared with you all before, I think 2 weeks ago, I did the live with Karima. That's how we got our guest to week before last. And one of the things that Karima was talking about when we did our live was, you know, relationships are about feelings. And I was like, no, relationships, there's a business component to relationships. We have to be about our business. You know, we have to be about our business in relationships. We have to be about our business with our family. You know, insurance is paramount. I cannot stress that enough. Insurance is that mechanism that a lot of folks have passed wealth down throughout the years. And, you know, if you don't have it, please get it. And the younger you are, the better it is for you to get. It's cheaper. You're less of a risk. But even if you're older, man, at least carry $10,000, $15,000 on yourself, please. At least put your family in a situation where they can put you in the ground, they can burn you up, ashes, whatever, you know what I'm saying, without having to reduce themselves to selling plates or starting a GoFundMe account. Like, this is ludicrous, you know what I'm saying? Like, don't do that. Seriously, don't be that damn selfish. It's not that expensive, and it is hugely impactful on the family that is not prepared. Hugely impactful on them. You know what I mean? You start to build up some walls, man. You know what I'm saying? Because those who have a little something, they always get tapped. They the first ones to get tapped. And they start to get bitter. And rightfully so. You know, why are you motherfuckers always coming at me? That was my uncle. That was my aunt. That was my cousin. Yeah, but you're their father. You're their brother. You're their sister. You're their mother. Why are you looking at me? That's not my responsibility. And again, you start to create those fissures and those risks, and we wound up where we are. And it's just not right. Not right. Not right. You know, handle your business. Handle your scandal. Hell, I'm telling you, get a trust and a will. I'm telling you, more important than either of those things, have some damn life insurance. Have some medical insurance. Let me tell you something. I started a part-time gig. Some motherfuckers are charging me $30-something dollars every 2 weeks for full medical. I told my full-time job, yeah, y'all can cancel that shit. I'm like, yo, are you serious right now? I don't care if it's a PPO, a FLA, a CVS, a FBI. I don't give a damn what it is. You know what I'm saying? If I can save $200-something dollars a month, put back in my pocket, by not paying you all, and these jokers only charging me $30-something dollars a month for health, dental, and vision, shit, I'll take it. I will take it. If it's an HMO, okay, I'll work with it. You know what I'm saying? I will go through the hoops and jumps and barrels in order to, you know, make that work for me. But I will take that $200-something dollars a month and put it right back in my pocket. Thank you very much. Now, I'm going to keep the Duck. I'm going to keep Aflac. I'm going to keep the other stuff through, you know, my full-time gig. But, y'all can, ain't. I don't know where you going to go and you being charged $30-something dollars a month for health, dental, and vision. You know what I'm saying? Sister Rashi. Do you pay that?
So we talking,
I'm sorry, it's $70 a month.
It like this because see, people don't even know. They just think one insurance, life insurance, and
right.
the government handle everything else. When they get sick, poor people just go to the hospital. And the taxpayer foots the insurance bill for the poor. So we do not concern ourselves with insurance because we know that there is a law. There is a law saying that people have to do something about us if we about to die. There's a place that we go in our society, the hospital, the clinic or whatever, and if we go and we are unwell, they are bound by law to do something. Now, they can chase you and your grandchildren for that little money they're looking for. But in honesty, it is written off just like the stuff people steal from retail stores is written off. There is a medical fund where they go and say, this is blah, blah, blah. This is their budget. This is what they make in a year, which is nothing. They were sick. They can't pay. So now the government wants you to sign up for Medicaid. Medicaid is your insurance, poor people. Stop pretending like you balling. Go down to the state office because it's a state-funded program, and you paying for it every time you buy anything. Go down, get your Medicaid. If you old as hell or you a veteran or you might have some going on upstairs, you get Medicare. You get Medicare when you like that because you're going to need persistent, consistent care. Other than that, when you get ready to get pregnant, you go and you have your baby and you come the fuck on up out of there 2 days later as if you just had a procedure done. The medical field itself is a racket. So if you allow them people to charge you hand over fist for something that you know they're going to write off, it's up to you. It's up to you. But I personally prefer government-funded medicine. Because insurance policies are for medical, okay, is a racket. Dental, I consider medical. I don't know why they don't think your teeth is in your body. Your teeth is your body.
Right.
I don't understand why that's two separate things. Quit playing with the church's money and put the dental. Where is dental? Why are your eyes and your teeth not your body? Vision
and
dental is medical. Quit playing with the church's money, dividing up that, I don't know, it's running through a particular network. You understand, of people agreeing to accept that government money together. It's a racket, do you hear me? And now the only one that makes any sense is the life insurance. Lee, you spoke on it, and I believe in it. The life insurance policy is, in fact, the poor person's way up. You know we gonna die.
Absolutely.
We know we gonna die because we the less supported, we the less fed, we the less housed, less educated. So you know we gonna die. So poor people, if you don't do nothing else, find another poor person and put a policy on that motherfucker because they gonna die, and that's gonna be one of the only ways that you make sure not only that you are right, put a policy on yourself. Yes, yes. And then on some other poor person, because you know the way the system is set up, that's how they doing it. That's how they doing it.
You're right. You're right. You're absolutely right. But sis, how much are you paying for your health insurance through your employer?
I told them no. I put it on the state. I told them people no. For one, I don't go to the hospital enough, and if I do, they going to pay for it. The state going to pay. That's right. The state is going to pay. I'm not paying anybody insurance company and I'm still under the poverty line, and I can't even get housed properly, and the medicine I take regularly is damn near I'm not paying that shit. Y'all going to pay. Y'all wearing me into the ground with these badass kids, so y'all going to pay. Y'all gonna pay, and I put it on the state. That's right. Medicare, Medicaid.
Brother.
I went and signed up for all that. Obamacare, affordable health care. That's the closest you're going to get out of an insurance plan for me is Obamacare. That's the closest they get to getting a couple of their little pennies back out of you, poor.
Mm-hmm. Bro, Barry, what are you doing for healthcare right now? You are technically an independent contractor, right?
I am an independent contractor, and I do have a form of Obamacare that I pay for.
Okay. How you like that?
But what I was, I think, you know, and I was just talking to my sons about this, you know, the thing with anytime you have the government infuse either legislation or money into a market, what happens is the consumer pays more. I'll give you a good example. It's almost like when they said they're going to raise the amount of Pell Grant funding for colleges. All of a sudden, they start raising the price of books and tuition fees go up, right? Why? Because the government infuses that money. The problem with insurance is once a government got involved, what they should have done was capped how much per income should an employee have to pay into insurance. And also, they should have made sure that the quality either stayed at a standard or raised the standard. There's a lot of things to me that is wrong with our healthcare and the insurance companies because you're just paying the middleman. The insurance company is not connected to the hospital that you are going to see or the clinic that you're going to see. Why is it that we've got so many of these businesses? And Amazon Prime is sort of like the same thing. Jeff Bezos does not create most of the things that we buy. He's just the middleman. He adds extra dollars onto that middleman. In a world where there's so many websites and we're all supposed to be connected on the internet, we should be done with the middleman. Things should be far much cheaper today than what they are. And the only reason why we're still paying high prices for insurance, whether it's medical, whether it's life, whether it's dental, is because we're paying the middleman. We're paying that person who's supposed to be connecting us, when in reality, bro, we could easily go online and say, okay, dental insurance near me. And okay, we could subtract that fee that we would be paying to, let's say, Alina, and let's just pay that dentist office monthly ourselves just in case we have to go. Even though we won't be going, we could probably pay that $15 a month for that dental fee. You get what I'm saying? Or maybe it's $50. What if we pay $50 a month for dental, right? And then we pay another $100 a month for our medical, and that $100 would cover whether we go to a clinic or we'll go to if we go to the hospital. Now, you pay $150, and that covers you and your family. But let's say you guys don't go but maybe twice a year. They're still going to reap the reward of the collective dollars going to them. They got more technology, and they're going to charge you more money for the technology that they invested in that's supposed to make things safer, that's supposed to improve your health so you're not always coming back using the system. It just doesn't – the model just doesn't add up. And I feel, listening to you both, when you're like, hey, you know, the price, I'm reminded in 2001 when I started at Quest Telecommunication, which is now CenturyLink here, I was paying nothing for my medical insurance, nothing. And I had full medical insurance. I had full dental insurance, full health care insurance. And, by the way, I had tuition reimbursement, but I was in a unionized job. And I feel like we've gone a long ways away from that.
You were in a unionized job?
I was in a unionized job.
And they fought for that. I'm going to come back to that in a half a second.
And they fought for that. So to me, I think that, and I hear you all about the idea of people being responsible, but the other side of it too is, you know, healthcare and health for the nation is a matter of national security. But in some ways, the government should be responsible for the health of its people. The government should be responsible for the food that they allow their people to eat or to consume compared to other countries. That's the government's job. It's not to take money from the lobbyists so that they can serve us junk. That's our rest right there.
So speaking of the union, right, so, you know, we're still going through the whole uproar with UAW. The writers have gone back to work, so they've signed the deal. Actors should be up next. They should be coming back to work pretty soon. The quest, one of the requests for UAW is for the 32-hour work week. Have we come to a point where it's going to be unsustainable for companies to meet the demands of labor and still meet the demands of the shareholder? I say that because I'm going to let you all get on top of this. Give me a second. I'm going to play. California just passed legislation in which fast food workers will now have a minimum wage of $20 an hour. California, fast food, only for fast food workers, but they will have a minimum wage of $20 an hour. How is that going to be sustainable for Wendy's, Donald's, Burger King, Jack in the Crack, also known as Jack in the Box, et cetera, when they still have a responsibility as a corporation? They have a responsibility to their shareholders. How are they going to be able to recover those costs or cover up for those costs and still meet the expectations of the shareholders, if not by getting rid of labor? Brother Barry, I'm going to start with you.
Well, brother, you know, I think that that's going to be tough because, once again, it's almost like you put one part to it and then you don't adjust the other side. California has ridiculous rental prices for home rental, and it has ridiculous real estate prices, and they haven't capped those things, and they haven't made that livable. So, yeah, you can raise it to 20, but like I said again, once again, yeah, as soon as you raise it to $20, the CEOs still want their parachute. They still want their stock options. They still want their 10-figure salary, right? And so if
and
you don't put adjustments in cash, come on, brother. So if you don't put the cash
every year,
on
that large-ass phone.
Right. And that's why you got to cap those in a state or you got to cap those in the federal government, because that's really not capitalism. If you really look at it, it's welfare. But, like, listen, man, they're not earning that. And I think a lot of the – we glamorize CEOs as if CEOs all started at the mailroom or they all started on the burger line. And they did not. Most of them had silver spoons. They are literally inheriting jobs that their father's father sat on boards on, right? Like, that's what's going on in this country. So the $20 an hour, because in Minnesota they're going to raise it to $19. And the one thing I've noticed here, our real estate prices is crazy. Our rental prices is crazy. And the city of Minneapolis, well, they have a very, I call, you know, strange kind of, you know, city council. They got everything that is new age on it, right? They got transgender males, transgender females. They got bisexuals. They got whatever. They got it all, right? They got everything on there. And they still couldn't understand why capping rent made sense to not price the poor out. So you can raise it to 20. Rent's just going up. Food prices are just going up. So to me, I don't think that solves it. I think it's like partial of the equation. And once again, without a union to kind of like broker and kind of explain everything to everyone and say, yeah, you got $20, but this is what else is about to go up. And they're going to raise that. You won't be able to afford these things. That's what I feel like people are missing out on.
Yeah. Sister Rashi, what you think about that? You have a teenage son. You want to ship his ass off to California so he can get that money or what?
No, I've been talking to these young people. I just had a, you know, question and answer from some young people asking, where y'all getting y'all money from? For real, where the money coming from? And you'd be, most of them is pimping their parents, talking about chores, allowances and all that. And I mean, I got it, okay, because they, They did. My mama didn't play that. You cleaning up behind yourself, but not for pay.
Right.
Some people said that they do some they making bracelets and trinkets and shit. One dude said he had a pretty good idea. He said his daddy got a game room, and he let kids come over to his house and play the games, and they pay him like a dollar.
So he said it like an arcade. Oh yeah, yeah. He said it
okay.
Like that's a smart move.
Okay,
that's a smart move. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I asked him where that at. I might want to come through. Right. Pull up.
Yeah.
Cause hell, there was most of two or three of the black girls have already started braiding, doing hair, right? Cause that's what we do. We do our own hair and then we do somebody
else.
How
old are your students?
We're talking about. Yeah, the people I was talking, these were not just my students. The people I was talking to was like 11 to 16. 11 to 16, that wide of a group, girls and boys. So the idea was joining the economy. How are you going to join our economy, especially the Kansas City economy? And it's a part of a job program where they're trying to get training, you know. Because it could be as easy as watching videos, you know. Most people getting trained on a video screen on how to lift and how to go down. You understand warehouse training, all that, forklift training. It's on a screen, driving training. Some of the students was ready to drive. They said that if they could get somebody to give them their provisional license, they'd go and start Ubering because they already know how to drive. They look crazy uncle to let them learn how to drive. You know how y'all are. But mostly, they don't talk about fast food anymore. They do not discuss going to get anybody's fast food job. They have decided that, for one, it don't have no dignity to it. And secondly, the money do not come fast enough. Young people today want to finish this task and get their cash, okay? Finish doing whatever it is that is and pay me my money. Huh?
Some of them are paying like that. I saw a sign at a Wendy's. I think it was a Wendy's. They said, you work today, you get paid today. You can get paid at the
okay,
end of your shift every day.
They probably don't have no problem with staffing then. And it might even be a few youngins up in there, because if you don't get away to pay them that money to them as soon as possible, they cannot sustain. And I'm talking about up to 25 years old. I'm talking about people up to 25, they cannot keep working, paying into the idea of what's going to happen in 2 weeks. Sometimes it'd be 3 weeks because they'd be held a week back. You know what I'm saying? And they can't hold, they can't do it. So they have to watch a child, get the money when the mama come home, and then that's good. I had a lot of the little white girls that was in the crowd. They was babysitters. Watch the little kid. The kid, 4 hours is over. They get their money. They go home. Okay? So that the idea of instant commerce is very fascinating to our young people. And the fast food industry has not evolved, in their opinion, enough to capture their attention. It has to happen quickly, like an electronic money transfer. One of the little boys said that he scouts the internet for coupons for, like, games. You know, you can download a game. If you do this, you can download this game for half price, right? So you come, he tells you about the deal, not all of it, right? You pay him a dollar, and then he give you the code that you need, you know, to do the deal. But you can scout it, too. You can find it, too, if you was ready to go through all the rigor, you know, do all what he was doing. But after he do all his research, he sells the code intel to young people, and they pay him a dollar so that they can go and download a game for 50% off. You hear me, how the fast things is moving?
So we're learning how to be our oppressor, which is to me, that's what I feel like we don't educate each other about enough. The real quickest way to get coin is group economics, because you can save more and you can make more. You just got to know how to do it. You know, the Jewish community, they have holidays where they forgive debt. Did you guys know that? Where they forgive debt from each other?
Mm-mm.
Did you guys know that at all?
I didn't.
So, yeah, so you can
No,
hold,
I've never heard of that. Because I was thinking about Hebrewism. What date is that?
Well, you got to be an actual born Jew. You know,
Goldberg. Well, all I got to do is go into the rhetoric, because, you know, they say we are the original Jews.
Well, yeah, that got Kyrie in trouble. But
I almost got that brother killed.
Yeah, right.
See, I'm not cheap, y'all. It's just in my DNA.
But no, you know, for me, I just think that we have to learn that group economics is it, and slow economics do work. I think that, this is what I would say, you know, when I think about these, the average pay and everything, it's not how much money you get paid. It's how much money you can retain, right? I make about six figures, but if you really take what I pay for everything, you know, my son's tuition, you know, for my place, you know, my car, you know, utilities, you know, the things that I help with, you know, my mom, my girl, her kids, whatever it may be, that's absolutely nothing, because you're not necessarily retaining, and we don't necessarily know, and we don't practice, and this goes back to the relationship piece. White folks have learned how to put them coins together. That's why marriage for them is the ultimate business, and they attack it like a business. You may get the personal stuff in between, but they don't stand on business. We stand on style points and this indignant righteousness that ends up, we're always at the beggar's table because we're trying to be too righteous. You just have to, you really have to look at things and say, no, man, you're going to give me 20 an hour. Okay, so what am I going to lose? Like, that's the question that we always must ask. And I'll say this. As much as I do not like most other conservative or Republican politicians all around the country, the one thing I can say about the red states is that most of them are affordable to live in, they're not high in taxing, and you can get whatever necessity that you need if you're willing to work for it. You can get a house, you can get a car, you can even get life insurance, health insurance, if you're willing to work for it. It's the liberal states that everything costs 3 to 4 times more. And part of that is because they want to feed any and everybody they don't want to feed the people in the country that's from the country. They want to feed everybody that's coming from out of the country into the country. And that's, for me, as a taxpayer, that's my frustration with all of this. It costs too much on the American people for some of these things that should just be common sense.
Hey, I will push back on that, because the state that I grew up in, Maryland, has been led by Democrats.
Y'all love
me.
Y'all love me. So
I was going to say, and I agree with you, because, see, when you sit on money, you ain't got them kind of problems. You know what I'm saying? You know what I mean? But
yeah,
when you're sitting on a pile of cash, it's like, well, you know, yeah, we going to raise y'all taxes, dog. I know you're a little mad, but y'all niggas be all right. You know what I'm saying? Like, well, you know, I'm pissed, but you're right. I will be all right still, you know what I'm saying? And then somebody comes along a couple years later, it's like, oh, well, we needed that money to get a nice little surplus. We got the surplus, and we gonna cut the taxes again, dog. Now the way that Maryland's tax system works, and one of the things that I've been very impressed with the state of Maryland is still running only a 6% state tax. That's it. 6%. Most states are 7, 7.5, 8. Maryland's at 6%. Flat. A flat 6%. Now, you're right. Some other states are cheaper to live in, but you get a lot for that 6%. And the tax cuts are not necessarily a tax cut as far as your income is concerned. So what tends to happen is you get a tax cut from other things. So we have tolls heavily in, well, they, because I no longer live there. They have tolls heavily in the state of Maryland. And what will happen is, well, we'll take the toll fees from $6 to $3.50. If you don't think that's huge when you're traveling constantly through those tolls, which unfortunately is the majority of the damn state, because Baltimore is inland, but in a lot of ways it's still an island. You know what I'm saying? Because of the inner harbor, it really does cut it off to give it an island feel. Again, it's inland, but it has that island feel because of the harbor. And you can't build over water. You can't build something. You know what I'm saying? Like, there has to be a bridge or a tunnel. Something has to keep it together. And so, you know, eventually, even if you don't live in Baltimore, you have to drive through Baltimore. If you drive through Baltimore, you're going through a tunnel. You're going through a toll. It's just going to happen. And due to interstate commerce, that's a quick and easy catch all the time. But just the majority of workers, the money seat in Maryland is in Baltimore. That's where the money is as far as the producer. Mm-hmm. Now, that doesn't mean that's where it is, but that's the producer of money is in Baltimore. So I've seen it on the other side. Now, living in Carolina, you know, I was blown away because I have a trash bill, electric bill, a gas bill, and a water bill. And I'm like, who the hell pays for water and gas separate, number one? And then who the hell pays for trash? Like, ain't nobody paying for no damn trash. But I pay for trash. Usually that's included. What I have been accustomed to, it's included in your taxes. So your trash pickup is included in your taxes. It's just rolled into one and you just keep it pressing. So that has truly thrown me about that. But what I do say that red states do well, as you said, Brother Barry, I tip the hat off to them, is pretty much keep living affordable. The problem with that, though, if you're not a towner and you're trying to get yourself established, pay tends to be totally different. And that is hurtful. You know what I'm saying? When you go from, as you said, six figures, right? You go from six figures and you're like, okay, well, I'm good. And then you, for whatever reason, you decide to get up and not take a transfer and just relocate, blah, blah, blah. And you're getting offers for the same job and they're paying you 60% of what you were making before. It's like, yo, what you mean? You know, I think I've shared this story before. When I left, when my grandmother passed in 2003, I left Maryland and I decided to go back to Alabama. And Brother Rodney's on, by the way. Good morning, sir. Go back to Alabama. And I was like, you know, worst case scenario, just to get myself started, because my cousin was living there. Now, I'll go live with my cousin for a bit. And I'll get a forklift job. And, you know, I'll be okay. It gives me an opportunity to figure out who I want to work for about a little more. Man, I was paying forklift operators, I mean, bare bones minimum, like $16.50 an hour, some shit like that. Bare bones minimum. I'm talking very little experience, but that was bottom basement. This was 2003. I got to Alabama, man. They talking about $7, $7.50 an hour. I'm like, well, who, what? What? They didn't recognize it as a skill. They thought that, you know, if you can drive a car, you can drive a forklift. And that's not the case at all. But that's what it is, and that's what it was. So relocating and trying to find that footing can be difficult. But, yes, definitely. A large degree of more freedom, a larger degree of better living as far as the money is concerned. I don't necessarily say better living conditions. I think that's a personal thing. One of the things I'm fighting with myself with now is I love the peace in North Carolina. I just don't love the pace. Like, I'm not a cat that wants to rip and run, be gone all hours of the night anymore. I'm beyond that in life. But I like to be nearer to the potential of having that type of life because from what I've seen in my travels, and, you know, I've only traveled just a little bit. You know, I really haven't been anywhere. In that type of life,
just
you
the
have
other
to
side of the world.
Yeah, you know, what I'm saying? Like I've only been you know, one, two places. You know, but culture comes with that type of life, and that's important to me. And a cat challenged me in California. He was like, actually, when I was on my way out to T Rod, he was like, define culture. And I was like, well, culture to me is a vibrant food scene, great museums, ballet, a symphony orchestra, plays, not just the chit with certain plays, but I'm talking about plays, a good parks and rec system. You know, your parks and recs is vital to a community. Like, usually those are the jokers that put on the free concerts and the free entertainment and da-da-da-da-da-da. And notice I'm emphasizing that word free. I think that's important. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody can't afford to pay for everything. And you shouldn't have to pay for everything all the time. You shouldn't have to pay to go to an event and then have to pay your way through the entire freaking event all of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Some things should be free from the city because you pay your money in freaking taxes. Hey, we want to keep you here. These are the free things that we do. Now, you have to pay your way after you get there, but for you to get there, this is free to you to attend. And no, and everybody knows it's not free for you to attend. If you go by yourself, you're going to get hungry. If you go with your significant other, they're going to get hungry. If you go with kids, they're going to get hungry and thirsty. Nothing's ever freaking free. And there's nothing wrong with that. But give people at least an opportunity to get out of the house, to unwind, to see a different part of the city, to see another side of their surroundings that may encourage them to stay, to firmly plant roots and grow. You know what I'm saying? What's up, Brother Rodney? How you doing? Morning to you.
Good morning, everybody. And I am doing... just being up, brothers, and of course up for you and your show. And it's another beautiful day in Las Vegas, where our tax rate is like 8.89%, but we pay no state taxes, and we pay no city taxes, and we pay no borough taxes. We just pay federal
Baltimore
taxes.
Baltimore does not have a city tax.
Sales tax.
Baltimore does not have a city tax. Only pay state tax. That's it. Baltimore does not have a separate tax rate at all. We don't have a county tax. We don't have a city tax. The only tax rate that you pay in the state of Maryland is your state taxes. That's it. Nope. You know what? Columbia may have a tax, but Howard County may have a tax, but Baltimore City does not have a separate tax at all. And it's at 6%. You know what I'm saying? But I know you've been absent a little bit. We got on this because I started off the show talking about the importance of having affairs in order because I'm in Virginia for a funeral. And that really wasn't it. It was more, you know, our guest that we were looking at today that's coming on next week, he was talking about some estate planning he was doing yesterday. And then I'm thinking about this even more intensely this morning on the drive up because a rapper that passed away recently, he and his bandmates were in litigation right before he passed about their royalties. And I was just thinking about how important that was to solidify, you know what I'm saying? But what we wanted to talk about today on the show, obviously, Dianne Feinstein passed yesterday. Senator wanted to talk about her. the continuance of the strikes with the UAW. We spoke briefly about the writers going back. The actors should be going back in short order. Hopefully, God willing, the creek don't rise. But those are the things we really wanted to peel back today and discuss. And I thought it would be a neat way to start off to talk about the estate stuff, and because as we get older, one of the natural phases of life is the money. And I just think it's selfish to not plan for stuff like that ahead of time. And I know we've talked about it a number of times on the show, but I think it's just one of those extremely important topics to not let it go by the wayside. You know what I'm saying? And life will have a tendency of reminding you of stuff like that because, you know, when you turn around, somebody else, you know, will be lost and stuff. And I'm not trying to be morbid. I'm just trying to be honest. You know, the older you get, the older people that you knew got. Like, yo, for real. We're celebrating 50 years in hip-hop, so I reached out to Skills, and I said, yo, you going to be on the BET Awards? And he's like, nah. And I was like, all right, that sucks. But then I started thinking about it, and I was like, well, Skills ain't that old. You know, Skills and I are around the same age. But I'm thinking about Dougie Fresh. I'm thinking about KRS-One. I'm thinking about Chuck D. I'm thinking about the folks in my life whom I looked up to as a youngster, and they may have been a couple years older, or they may have been a lot of years older, and they really old now. Shit, my ass is old. So if I'm old, I know they old. You know what I'm saying? Like, we talking about jokers in their mid-late 60s. Hell, some of them in their early 70s. Not that that's old, but that ain't young. You know, all of us have less sunrises than we've had sunsets. You know what I'm saying? And that reality is something that's worth respecting, if I think that's the best way to say it. I think that's the best way. You know what I'm saying? But, Rashi, what I don't want to go too far off. Is Kansas City a hub for the auto industry at all? Have you all seen any impact from
the strike in Kansas City? We got Harley Davidson. We got the UAW. We got a couple of plants out here. Ford. Have they walked off? But what they have done is they furlough dance. Like I told you last week, they're doing strategic taking people's work hours all the way back to, you know, and then where they don't get paid nothing, but they don't get full comp. Oh Lord, there's somebody burning donuts in the middle of my street. There's a teenager with a car literally doing donuts burning up in the middle of the street. I don't understand people anymore. I'm just so tired. Anyway, speaking of cars, right? Yeah, hopefully we do, because now people have took the tearing their car up in the middle of the street. Yes, we do. No, I can't say that we're suffering. Let me tell you what's kicking Kansas City's ass. It's the housing industry. There's a litany of dilapidated buildings just leaning to the side, taking up space where we could have new, you know, non-moldy, non-lead field, non-asbestos housing, and the city just will not invest in itself because the majority of the investment will happen within the part of town that has been intentionally and professionally neglected. And so Missouri has a 4.2-something state tax. Kansas City itself is a little higher because they have to do something with all these urbanites. You know what I'm saying? All us urbanites up here make the city make the city's taxes a little higher. But even dollar, which we are arguing with the state for about, because they have assessed these houses and put a state tax on some of these houses that is going to make all these people have to move and get up out of their house because they won't afford, they can't afford the taxes on the house, right? Because they didn't assess it too high. So they saying, okay, you telling me this house is worth this much, right? But now you telling me also that if I don't fix this, 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 and this, you're going to condemn it. That it's not into code. That it's this and that, right? And they trying to get the precious dance between the home, the property owner, and the state and city to, you know, figure out what they going to do about old-ass KC. Because there are houses in Kansas City that are, there's no one should live in. The pipes, you know, are original, like to the 1800s. All right.
Oh,
so
wow.
I don't know what to tell some people. They we could, but you can only afford housing on a certain part of town. They have put a what I call a black tax over there. They have a black tax on the other side of the city where if you don't want to pay $2,700 for a house that's worth $1,000, they put a $1,000 surcharge on it to say, you stay your black ass. I mean, excuse me, urbanites, please make this your last choice.
Oh, we knew what urbanites meant. We all knew what urbanites meant.
And so this is the Kansas City that you should understand. We are one of the most functionally racist cities I've ever been in. There is they have a lot of, we try to unite in art, but there's still a very clean divider between white and black art in Kansas City. Black art is all, you know, struggle, look, it's all like graffiti, and white art in Kansas City is still looking like, you know, Thomas Hart Benton. They still painting landscapes of the parks and stuff, and we painting bloody flags of, you know, American bloody flags. So the mindset of the artists even in the city don't even match under the umbrella of art. So I don't know what to tell you about a city except that Kansas City is not prepared to deal with the population of people. So they shove these people. And so technically we're looking at an experiment. And what and who don't ever have to be experimental, fluent white people, they have paid to segregate. That's the good thing about it. I can tell you one thing. You want to know one good thing, though? When you got enough money to segregate
Please.
Yourself, then shut up. Yeah, shut up and take your ass on. Because what I won't have you doing is ruining my way of life because it don't mess with yours. And I'm
okay.
I got to go.
Brother Barry.
Yeah.
Brother Barry, this may not affect
yes,
the Twin Cities. This may not affect the Twin Cities as much, and if it doesn't, that's fine. But how impactful has this been on Fort Bend? You know, I'm saying back in Indiana, bro. What's going on?
Well, I think it impacts us everywhere now, because so many of these corporations are kind of tied in business with each other. So the stress on one end, it may show itself in other forms, right? It's almost like
yes,
if you're digging for oil inside of North Dakota, you might end up having a sinkhole inside of Kansas City. That may be that. Mm. That may be the impact for fracking. And so what I tell you, man, because gas here is crazy, brother. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's crazy. We oh, my God, man, listen. I was just happy to see 3.
Now, what do you consider crazy?
Right.
Bro? What do you consider crazy?
I think.
What price are you talking about?
I think. So for me, I think right now with technology and where everything is at, technically we should all be looking at $1.75 for gas. Just being real.
Bring them days back.
The problem that we have, and once again, it goes right back to politics, is that we're literally paying for the CEOs, because we know that OPEC is not changing the price. It's when it hits the shore. It's the prices that we're paying. Like America is really ran by robber barons, and that's not enough of a discussion. We spend so much time on Trump and not Trump bosses. Like who are the people who are allowing Trump to be in this space? who's paying Trump to distract us, or who's paying to distract us with a Trump, right? Because that's the kabuki theater side of it. The other side of it is if the gas prices or the oil prices goes up, that's going to change the price of food. That's going to change the price of clothes. That's going to change the price of even for the trucking industry, right? Because they got to deliver all of these goods for us. We can't even get wood from the South, from some of these, you know, these wood farms if they're going to charge the price. We can't even get that at a discounted rate. So even housing has gone up because it costs so much to transport the material to do the housing. And so I just, you know, this is the part of, you know, the country where I say, man, if more of us really cared and gave a damn about civics and economics and see how it's all tied in together, let's not just think from the morality piece. Let's think about the whole puzzle, because the morality piece is just one portion of it, right? Like, you need good morality. So I'm not anti-good morality. But we don't need it to where we're paying one person like 35 times more than the lowest paid person in the company, or 35,000 times more than the lowest paid person in the company. That doesn't make sense when we know this CEO is pretty much going to go sit in meetings. Somebody will sit next to him or her, interpret what's being said, right? They're going to go take a couple of expensive lunches that they don't have to pay for, driving in the company car, flying in the company jet. Then they're going to go hit the golf course for the next 5 hours, take a nap, wake up, and go on vacation for the other 4 days of the week, right? Like, why is that person making that much money? And that is the thing where I don't feel like the American public is fed up, because everybody's kind of dreaming of one of three things. Either A, they're dreaming to be in the position of that person, B, they're dreaming to marry that person, or C, they just believe that there's nothing we can do about it and they just giving up. But I feel like that is the conversation in politics that we're not talking about. How much is too much for these CEOs, and why isn't it any federal regulation? And one last piece. They're not going to just pack up and leave this country. I want to say that because I think it's very, like it's misleading sometimes. Like, oh, they're just going to leave. Well, other countries have laws in place that they can't bring certain materials that they use to sell the products here and around the world, right? Yeah. So they have to stay here for the most part because this country kind of gives them shelter to put together some of the BS that they're putting together in the first place. So they can't just up and leave. It would just mean that they would just have to reshuffle. And trust me, no corporation is willing to go belly up to make sure that the CEO keeps the parachute. No company is willing to. They would just say, okay. The CEO, he can't make $100 million. He can only make 10. Okay, fine. Well, that means that the money goes right back to the shareholders. Nobody's tripping off that.
Rodney, with all those warehouses and whatnot that they're throwing up in Vegas right and left and right, has the UAW strike had any impact in Vegas that you're aware of?
No, there's been no direct impact. Probably the biggest impact these strikes have had on us in general is the fact that people can strike again and win. And so that is having, I believe, a positive impact, because even though unions are troubling to me, especially associated with the black community, there's been a lot of benefits that workers have gained from the unions. That's just historical fact. So we do need unions now, as some of these other companies like Amazon and some others are finding out people want some benefits. They don't. People are tired, and as they should be, of working a 9-to-5, 5 days a week, and just for basic living, having to go get another part-time job, and in some cases, another full-time job. And that might be if they have somebody else at home working, because none of them are making enough. So historically, we know that when you pay workers more money, America does better in general. And so what I'm hoping is that there are more strikes. I think teachers should go on strike, even though it's against the law in our state for teachers to go on strike. I think that if they don't, and they need to do it now, is while there's the American worker is starting to stand up and raise their voice and make a statement, it's time for all workers who are underpaid. Now, some of my black conservative friends would tell me, but Rodney, that means inflation will go up and prices will go up. Well, everything goes up. So, you know, eventually everything goes up. And to your point, we don't have that same feeling when the CEO salary goes up. So why suddenly is it a problem when the worker's salary go up? So I'm encouraged by the strike. I think more people should strike for the wage. And hopefully it won't just encourage people here in Nevada, but it'll encourage workers all over the country. And this is not to say that Elon Musk has to be poor. I'm not saying that at all. Before I was born, well, actually, not that long before I was born, the tax rate was like 90% for rich people, 90%. And we still have rich people at the time, mega wealthy people. So if the tax system, as you all are talking about what we need to look at, Brother Barry said we need to look at some things, but we need to look at the tax system, because the tax system is why a lot of people are in the situation that they're in. Whether it was what Reagan did in the 80s, compounded by what the Bushes did, and then made worse by what X-45 did. Cheeto Mussolini. Remember, everybody got a tax break for the most part under his tenure, but the tax break for everyday
person. Except for the poor.
Well, they got a little tax break too, but they didn't need quite as much. They got some extra deductions that some of them may or may not be able to take. But the bottom line is whatever tax rate non-wealthy people got, it's either run out or about to run out. But the tax rate that the empire class got, that's into perpetuity, and that's in the trillions of dollars. And those types of things, if we fix the tax system and reduce the tax on the working class, then you would see a dramatic rise in spending power and some of these, see a difference in some of these other areas.
Now that's interesting.
But
why are you talking about striking and forcing? Because you know our government is about to shut down. So is that some of what's driving these politicians? Are they also fighting for better wages?
No, this is a pissing contest between McCarthy and what's the boy name? Is it Katz? Gates down there in Florida. He doesn't want the gavel, but he doesn't want McCarthy to have it. And he's just trying to be a thorn in his side, because after 14 rounds of votes to decide his speakership, he won on the 15th. We all knew at that time that his speakership was shaky at best. And he's just flexing his muscle to remind him that at any point, we can pull you out of the seat. So that's what this is about. It's not about them wanting more money for themselves. It's about them wanting, the ultra-right is screaming that they want a deeper tax cut. And they want, even more so than that, just to flex their muscle and control on McCarthy. Somebody tell me if I'm wrong.
Well, you're not wrong. And I think that the thing with McCarthy, it's crazy. His name is McCarthy and McCarthyism, right? Like, let's think about this. And some of the things that's taking place in this country with the cancel culture pretty much is the new age McCarthyism, right? But with McCarthy, what I just don't get is that if you know that you really, it took you 15 tries, you know, at some point you are putting the American public at risk by assuming that role because you don't have the backing of your party. And by the way, you're not necessarily willing to work across the aisle either. So you're not taking the position to get anything done. It's just more grandstanding. And to me, that's kind of like feel what the Democrats could be stating at this point. Another thing, Sister Rashi, is that I don't think that they're trying to get the people more money. I think that they're trying to fill their coffers. And I said this last week, or maybe 2 weeks ago, and Brother Rodney agreed with me, and I'll say it again. I think they need to bring back pork barrel spending because the way things are going right now, they are refusing to reach across the aisle. And part of it, you know, the old saying, Sister Rashi, bring the bacon home, right? If the senator inside of Kansas, who's a Republican, had to bring money for a hospital inside of Kansas City back to those folks that's voting for him, he's going to agree with the lady Democrat senator in Minnesota who's trying to bring money back for a bridge inside of northern Minnesota. They're going to figure out ways to put their differences aside to bring that money back. Because if they don't, the people that's trying to challenge them for power will say, hey, you let your ego neglect the fact that the people that's voting for you needed something. Without that pork barrel spending, they have been more partisan than ever. And I know what John McCain was trying to do. I think, once again, on a morality sense, it sounds great. It sounds good from a moral aspect. But when you really look at what's happened since, you can tell that the morality aspect, you're dealing with people who really ain't got no damn morals anyway. That's why they want to stay
around. That's why we're in the situation we're in.
Exactly. So trying to appeal to the moralists is a waste of time. You have to put things in place to say, no, we get a balance and check sheet from you. And why did you shut down the government knowing that you were supposed to bring that money home for that school? Oh, we got to get you out of there. Now we don't want to hear about this Tea Party type, you know, obsession. You feel what I'm saying?
Okay. Well, they spin it. You know how they spin. So they make it look like they are being barred from working for the American people. It has a whole different spin, you know, never about somebody's ego, always about fulfilling a promise to the working man or to the person who is trying to build this country up to make it what it should be. So I'm glad to hear your spin
you
on
know
it
what?
To make sure.
That really gets my goat. These jokers are always pontificating about knowing what the American people want. They would walk by you and disdain in a heartbeat. They don't know what the hell the American people want. They don't care what the American people want. They're trying to get sound bites and score points as often as possible, and that's all that really matters to them. Whatever. I'm sorry. Rodney, what's your take?
Well, I can see everybody's point, but I think that we have to look even more basic than that, and that is, to me, it always goes back to education. If you don't have an educated electorate, it's an empty vessel that can be full of all of the bovine defecation that those politicians want to dump in it, and that's what they've been doing, is they've been dumping poop on us for way too long, and finally, we're starting to say, I'm tired of that poop, and my taste buds need to be readjusted to life before I was eating all of this poop. So it is time for the worker to stand up. There is enough money in this country that we can eliminate homeless. I don't know whether that was you who sent me a video, but it was a video of a young lady who was basically saying, we have to get serious. It's not that we can't. Is that we don't have the will. So if these things are things that we really believe in and want, there's no reason why every stoplight I go to, there's somebody asking for money. As a matter of fact, of the $10 million in food that we gave away in the Las Vegas community this last year, we just celebrated our year anniversary of giving away food, and we looked at the numbers. And, well, thank you. But here's the problem. We should not have been able to give away that many millions of dollars in food and it be a drop in the bucket of the need, and even a smaller drop in the bucket of the upcoming need once all of those COVID benefits run out. And if we don't give people pay raises and put more people to work. So I think it's very basic. Educate the people on that the people are the ones who are supposed to be running the government, because we always talk about what the politician is doing. Well, a politician is doing exactly what we allow the politician to do. We're not holding the politicians accountable. And without us ever holding the politician accountable, the politician is going to do what the corporate class tells the politician. The power is in the vote. That means the power is in the people. But you can be the biggest dude in the gym, and if somebody told you you're the weakest person, then you're not picking up one barbell because you think you're not able to do it. What workers are doing by standing up is they're kind of exercising that muscle, and kind of like Killmonger in Black Panther when he says, y'all been sitting up here comfortable. It feels good while the people out there are suffering. Well, if the people don't want the people to suffer, the people need to rise up and tell the corporate class to pay us appropriately, and tell the politicians, if the corporate class will not develop more homes, if the corporate class will not release more homes that they illegally took from the working people by giving out bad loans that they knew were bad loans, and if we don't start punishing these people, these white-collar criminals, like we punish the person that's, you know, smashing and grabbing, then they will just continue to do it. So I believe we need to look at how do we get us to do more, because we won't get the politician to do more until we do more. And the number of homeless people, the cost of housing, the rising cost of housing throughout the nation is not because of the politician. For that matter, it may not even be as much by the corporate class. It is by the working class sitting on their ass, and I was trying to make it rhyme, you know, but it's the working class sitting on their ass that's allowing all of this negative stuff to happen to working people.
So I would say you were right about the education piece, but I put it back on the politicians, because when the Bush administration got rid of a lot of the policies that would not have allowed for the subprime loans to take place, that is a part of the politicians making the decision. The other side of it is when Obama then got in, they could have reversed those trends and kind of adopted newer laws. That is also a part of the politicians. The issue with the public is when we talk about like a recession or the Great Depression, they don't understand how they got out of the Great Depression. They don't understand why they swore to, like, it was almost like the unspoken secret that the Republicans can never be in charge of the national purse strings. Why? Because they literally drove the country into bankruptcy. What are their policies doing today? And the Democrats haven't done a good job of trying to rewrite those policies or speaking those truths. Another thing about educating the people, and this is going to seem like a turn, but I want you guys to follow me. This is the problem with cable news. During the Me Too movement, they knocked out all of the journalists that were at the head of a lot of these cable news networks. And believe me, people watch more MSNBC, CNN, and Fox News than they do the actual local news when it comes to national politics. That's what they're focusing on. Well, when you got people who are focusing on trivial, pretty much gossipy things, they don't necessarily know the history of the country. They don't know the history of the laws. They don't know the history of policies. This is what you're dumbing down the American public. This is being done on purpose. And yes, while that may be corporations, while that may be some of the public, I don't think if you don't know, that, like you can only do what you know, right? And it's hard to get people to know things when you don't have folks in place who are supposed to be able to elevate their thinking. That is the problem. Journalism, the fourth rail or the fourth level of government in this country, the fourth estate, thank you, I was looking for it and you found it for me, I appreciate you. The fourth estate needs to do its job. The fourth estate has got ransacked by the capitalistic side of things, by the oligarchs. It's no longer telling the truth, no longer foreshadowing what could happen, what is happening while it's happening. Listen, man, I don't think Joe Biden's son getting caught with cocaine in the White House is that big of a deal. It's just me. I think if the dude got caught with cocaine in the White House, okay, cool, send him to do what they do with most rich people, send him to rehab or send him to jail or whatever. What about the policies that's not being made that's harming us more? What about the policies that are happening that's harming us more? We don't even talk about what's happening around the rest of the world. We pretty much are like parked over there and inside of what's happening with the Russians and that little battle. We ain't talking about what other international business and stakes. They're dumbing us down on purpose. And I do agree, Rodney, in some aspects, the American public should know more. But I would also say you're not teaching yourself. Most people don't teach themselves. We may teach ourselves, but everyone is not like us. So I feel like that's part of the problem. And until we can get that fourth estate back being truth tellers and not being the damn National Enquirer, I've heard more about than Meghan Markle than I know about a lot of the policies in the country. So that, to me, I feel like that's where that has to start. And we have to start pushing back and say, hey, man, we need to stop really – we need to turn off MSNBC, CNN, and Fox. Like, it almost has to be to a point where people say, hey, I would rather go watch whatever on YouTube that's talking to me in detail before I go and subject myself to Anderson Cooper. I don't care that you came out of the closet. What does that got to do with the news you report? Who dials in and sleeps with does not help or hurt my life. I don't care. You're not to be celebrated because you came out of a closet, who you slept with, or because you married some white man or you married some ball player. Who the hell cares? You're there to report to us.
You married Young Jeezy.
People, by the way, man, come on, man. And by the way, let's keep in mind, they're on the American Airways. That all belongs to us as taxpayers. So it's not like that shit just belongs to them. It belongs to us. So that's my diatribe. That's where I feel like the problem lies, Brother Rodney. I feel like we've gotten twisted and turned. And I'll tell you, the guys like Chris Matthews and others that they took off the air, those are the guys that were kind of like always reminding us of what happened in the 1920s and 30s. They took those guys off strategically. And a lot of it, and I'll say it again, I'm not saying that we shouldn't protect women, but that wasn't what was happening or what they were doing with the national news. They were strategically removing those men because those men and some of those women were standing in the gaps with information that their current replacements do not have.
We talked about this. Rodney and I talked about this.
The Associated Press. The Associated Press is who he's tired of. You heard me? That whole unholy machine that all news gets filtered through. They get the news. They know about people being beheaded and swollen belly babies and NGOs with perverts in there. They know all the news, but they get to filter it. So if what you're looking for is unfiltered. You can't find unfiltered broadcasted news. That's the whole point of being able to get on the airwaves is somebody got to look at it first. whose job is it? I think it's like the producer's job or the editor or the, it's somebody's job to gatekeep broadcasted information. So that means you have to literally pay for the local information. Forgive me, I'm not feeling well.
That's okay.
You have to pay for local information from all these different locations. You got to have a paper that come in from the Philippines. You got to pay for Japanese news to come, you know, through the internet or whatever. You have to literally subscribe to those nations, not just national paper, because that's been filtered. You got to subscribe to the local news places where you know it's an almost impossible. You have to. You understand? You would have to be a very rich person,
but,
for one, to get all that intel.
But Rashi,
and then you would have to be, yeah.
Rodney and I were talking about this, but what was it, last week, Rodney? Maybe the week before, we were discussing some of the anchors whom are no longer with us because they passed away, and or with us because they've been removed from television. And, you know, we talked about, what's the boy's name? Schultz. And the fact that he passed away.
Oh, he passed away.
Not too long ago.
That was my guy.
Yeah, he passed away.
That was
They
pushed him off the radio. They pushed him off the TV first before he passed away.
Yeah. Yeah, and then I was talking about Russert Sr., not Luke, but what was his father's name?
Tim.
Tim Russert. And, you know, I love Peter Jennings. Like, I was a Peter Jennings dude. You feel me? And, you know, he died of cancer, obviously. But, and, you know, Peter Jennings was Canadian. I don't know if people know about that. And I was telling Rodney, I liken Ali Velshi to Peter Jennings. You know what I'm saying? I think that they are one and the same. Ali Velshi is Canadian. Ali Velshi has a great delivery, in my opinion. I like his demeanor. I love the fact that he's willing to listen and then will check your chin real hard if need be, which is always nice in an anchor. And to move away from that, I miss Dan Rather. Hell, even, what's the lady's name? Barbara Walters. You know, Barbara Walters gave some great interviews, you know, and but time, indifference to opinions, things of that nature, have pushed a lot of folks off of airwaves. And like you said, let's play hardball with Chris Matthews. Like, dude, I love watching that old dude go at it. That dude would go you.
So you're missing old Tavis, huh? You can still see Tavis. And if you want to see Michael Bay, then you have to go up to his house and see when he wake up from his nap, I guess. I don't know. But there, you,
I miss Tom Joyner. I do miss Tom Joyner.
Joyner, okay. I didn't appreciate how they did my girl Melissa Harris Perry either. I mean, she had fought so hard. You know what I'm saying? And in the realm of sports, they pushed Jamil out. Is Jamil still being able to talk about anything after they found her in flagrant? You understand, they find reasons. If you interview, hey, the way they did Roland Martin, they
don't
had him broadcasting out of his, after they took his show, his next show was in his kitchen. He was sitting at the bar area.
He was in the house.
Urban Knight say one monkey will not stop his show, he started broadcasting out of the bin. So I was like, okay. So what it is now we don't have to be beholden. If we have enough people asking, we can get our journalists to come with their own show. Sometimes it's podcasts. Sometimes they may have to get corporate, you know, federal funding where they share the bandwidth, like a Q4 Radio is one of them, which has an internet and a local radio connection, right? The whole idea, though, is if you really want to tell the truth, and I liken it to the Black Panthers, right, when they had their journalists out on the scene, you have to give, one, a band of writers who are willing to go and tell the truth, a band of reporters who are going to go out there and even get a job at Amazon. So when they talk about what happened, they can say, when I was working there, you know, in my investigative reporing, it includes something real, not just pontification. When you investigate a housing crisis and you don't have anybody who lived in that housing to talk to, that's disingenuous. That means your reporting is bad. So one of the things that we have started doing is there's not that many people willing to do reporting. It's a lot of people who report. It's not enough people investigating, willing to go, take that flight to China, take that flight, try to sneak over into North Korea so that you can really see what these nations are doing. If not, you
have to
wait on their
news.
Well,
ain't a lot of us going to North Korea. That ain't going to happen. You know,
well,
what I mean?
I know.
That ain't gonna happen.
You will not, you know what, you, but you get what I'm saying. We really get good intel. We get the best intel when we have a bold soul on the scene, willing to put themselves on the front line to gather intelligence that other people would never see. And so how many of those people are there? That's been put on us. With our cell phones, we are the new journalists of tomorrow. And so now, why would you ever have somebody interested in doing investigative reporting when it takes one lady standing in front of a liquor store to videotape the killing, you know, a cop choking, you know, man to death, and that's the news for the next 3 years. Just want us to know that the thing that's going on is that them jobs have been put on us, but we're still looking for somebody else to do it. So what do we do with that information?
I don't think we're looking for others to do it as much as it may come across, because I think people are the investigative piece. Yes, I think more news has become. Not so much news, more of opinion than actual news. And yes, we do need those folks out in the field doing the investigative piece. But going back to where we were probably in the quarter part of the discussion, how can you do that when everything is going up but your paycheck? So, you know, how many sponsors do you think you're going to get to tell real news when you may be exposing them, and you know, how many folks are in a situation where they are independently wealthy enough to put together trips on themselves, or to start working the streets and build the networks where they can do that type of investigative work. I just don't know, but what I do know is. We do have to Brother Rodney's point and to Brother Darius's point, we have to continue educate ourselves with whatever information we can get and then cross-reference that. You know, one thing ain't it. Sometimes you got to dig a little deeper and you have to do your own investigation to find out what's going on, where it's at, so on and so forth. So, there it is. But we have to take the time to educate ourselves, because we already know the quote unquote system ain't going to do it. Be it the media system. The media system or the education system. Go ahead, Rodney. I'm sorry.
No, I just wanted to, you know, to your comment. I love what you're saying, but I have to admit, Lee, we've been saying that since I was a young man. So we're talking 40 years ago. And so that thing about educating ourselves, are we going to do that? remember when you were here and I was talking about we have the Divine Nine, the Urban League, the NAACP, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And when I go to these meetings, now I don't know how it is where you are, so please jump in and let me know and let the listeners know. But how many times, and let's throw church in there because we know a bulk of people still go there, but how many times do we go to these places where you have masses of black people, where those black people are being educated on, well, almost anything, and especially are they educated on black people, like educated on blackness. Now, here, that is a very small percentage of meetings. I'm talking about single digits as a percentage of meetings where there's any type of education going on. So don't get me wrong. I'm not against us educating ourselves. We need to do it. But maybe the balance has shifted so much into us getting that very quick and self-gratification that there's too many uneducated people for those who are educated and willing to teach others, that there simply is not enough. And the attrition rate of the increased ignorance may be outweighing the number of people to teach them. So I'm just saying, are we going to do that? And let's keep in mind that, and I'm going to share this analogy, and I've shared it before, littering was a terrible thing when I was a young child in this country. Terrible. I saw somebody throw, and unfortunately it was somebody black, throw a bunch of trash out their window at a stoplight in a very nice car.
Yeah,
I may
burns
have.
Me up. Burns
just,
me
just
up.
Just dumped it out, right? when I was a very young child, that's just what we did, right? But if things got so bad that the corporate class was influenced, and not only were we taught children taught anti-littering in schools, which made a huge impact because most of us go to public schools. That was a part of the curriculum. But then on Saturday morning, remember the Native American with the one tear crying because we was messing up his land with trash?
Yep. Yep.
Yeah, it happened at the TV broadcast.
That was media, right? And what they did was they went after the children because they said the parents, they're too far gone. They're probably not going to change unless something significant happens in their life that forces them to. But if we go after those young minds, those children, right, then we can build that into them. So when they see their mommy and daddy do it, they can go, mommy and daddy, you're going to make the Indian cry by throwing that trash out the window. You're going to pollute the stream, and the beavers won't be able to swim and make their dam. That came actually from the children through a concerted effort of public education, media, and other institutions on the community level. So what I'm saying is if we want that education to take place by sort of grassroots, it will not happen with just that each one teach one philosophy is not working. And I just think that the attrition rate right now is too high. There has to be a mass effort. And until I see our black institutions, we'll simply go to the club and listen to some music and have a good time. We'll go to sporting events and have a good time. We will do a lot of things that have a good time. Heck, we could even get some education at sporting events. But do we?
Right.
And are we pushing for it? And that's what I'm saying.
Well,
education is still the key, and we have to make it happen on a mass scale. And we have the power for that. We have to exercise.
So what you're saying, the education is not wrong, and I'm not disagreeing with that. I'm just saying who is going to do the educating is the problem. And I do agree. I could speak firsthand about the issues with our legacy organizations here. Matter of fact, I haven't talked to you all, but I'm in the process of helping save a Minneapolis Urban League so it doesn't close its doors, right? Like, I'm like trying to find at least people who can at least put seven figures inside of their bank account so that they can actually get a – they only have a staff of three. And one is the president of the Urban League and the other is the janitor. They don't have like we're literally on the cusp of them having to close the doors after 10 years of the St. Paul Urban League being closed. And part of that is, you're right, we don't teach our history. That's very true. But part of the reason why our history is not talked about, Brother Rodney, in my opinion, is because it allows other people to feel comfortable to be around us. That's just my opinion. You know, I don't think other people want to hear about our history. So this all-inclusive role that we have, the first thing that we have to sacrifice is we have to sacrifice us and what we've been through so that we have these pseudo allyships. Now, you know, back to the – I like what you pointed out as far as the stuff with littering, and that's very true. They did a great campaign with it. And that was really the government governing, right? That's sort of like growing up on the Say No to Drugs campaign. Remember that with the commercials? This is your brain on drugs. Remember
yeah,
Crime McGruff?
Like,
how about McGruff the Crime
okay.
Dog? McGruff the Crime
right.
Dog.
Or
McGruff
the
Crime
Dog.
Think
right.
I'm playing out of crime.
No, and the Smokey
right.
the Bear. Stop burning America up. Come on.
Okay.
And the pervert. Don't be off in the pervert's house. I don't know how many times the government put their hands into the household through the airwaves.
Rashi, that used to be constant television, right? Do you remember how much that was being played when you got home, sitting at TV, watching? Sooner they wouldn't play it while the kids were at school. They almost waited for, everybody's out around 3 o'clock. Let's put it on TV then. These are the shows that the children are watching on Saturday. Let's play that now. What I'm saying is we don't even have cartoons for these kids to watch, right? Like, they have to have cable, honestly, to watch cartoons. There is no cartoons anymore on television for kids to watch for free. That's showing you that we took a crazy turn in this country. Now, who's responsible for that? That goes right back to the politicians, because the politicians have allowed that decay. They're supposed to be supervising what's happening on the airwaves. The FCC is supposed to put regulations in. And one last bit, and this is the thing that I think is very important. I don't believe that blogging and some of this stuff that we're seeing on YouTube and other things have helped. I honestly believe that people take blogs or opinion pieces as fact. They're not researched. And the other thing that I say that people take as fact that is not is documentaries. All documentaries are not rooted in truth. Documentaries are sculpted to tell a story that they want you to know. It's akin to reality TV. A lot of it is scripted. That's why you see things in sequence. So I feel like there's a lot of nuances, Brother Rodney, to this. And I agree it's education to a point, but I also believe that that goes back to that fourth estate, as I think Brother Lee reminded me of what it was. And that also goes to the fourth estate as well as the people who run the fourth estate and them being able to tell that story to the American public.
I want to go back a couple of steps because, you know, Rodney was talking about organizations stepping up to do the training. Brother Barry, you came in and said the troubles that the Chamber of Commerce will have. You know, when we talked about this before. I think our biggest challenge remains in organizations like this, the torch isn't being passed. So you have older folk who are stuck in these seats and refuse to move on, refuse to pass the torch. So no younger folks are coming in with fresh ideas and newer ways of doing things. So now you have a great organization that has historically been a benefit to the community, but it will die off because no one new in the community wants to go because these old farts don't want to let go of what little power they have. They're not willing to pass the torch, and that this is what we get. You know what I'm saying? And we've seen this, NAACP, Urban League, you name it. This is one of our problems. Your last bastions of hope may be a whole lot of women, but you don't get a whole lot of men in any age bracket coming into those organizations. And that's a problem because we can't overwork the sisters in everything. We can't have them spread super freaking thin over every daggone category. But this is what we tend to end ourselves up with. And or old-ass men, again, that don't want to pass the torch to anybody but themselves. You know what I'm saying? Or amongst themselves. Yes, sir.
The major mistake that we take when we look back in leadership in the past, and I'm talking about in present times, is that we look more into the showmanship than the actual things that they got done. And when I hear people emulating Baptist pastors, black or white, when I watch the showmanship of leadership, like I think I told you guys this a few years ago about the Minneapolis NAACP. I'm like, they had three lawyers as president for 6 years, and they didn't file one civil suit against the city that had a litany of things that they could have filed civil suits for on the behalf of black people, right? They didn't do it. Well, they were happy with the idea of the position and elevating themselves, and they were sisters, by the way. So they were black men, they were sisters, by the way. And they didn't elevate it. They just used that to springboard into other organizations or to create their own organization, and they stepped away from the NAACP. Same thing happened with the Urban League. The Minneapolis Urban League was thriving 20 years ago, but when leadership took over, what they started to do was to just take what was there, and they started selling off a lot of the property that the Urban League had, a lot of the programs they lost because they couldn't keep up with the finances. And now, because of what happened with the Feeding Our Future program here, I think I told y'all about it, with the Somali community, when they stole that $245 million. Now, if the state of Minnesota or a county or city give you a RFP, you have to have that money inside of your own coffers, and they reimburse you. Well, the Urban League doesn't have that money. So they can't even do economic programming. They can't help you get into home ownership. They can't help you do job training. They can't help you with any of the things that they once done that allow them to say, okay, we can navigate these county dollars, we can raise other funds, and then we can sustain. They don't even have that anymore. So you're right, Lee, when the torch isn't passed down, or there's not a progression plan based off the past, because I think Riley is right when he talks about the history. People should know why these organizations was formed. They should also know what their task is in the organization. When you don't talk about that outwardly, what you get is a lot of young as well as old opportunists, and they just want the spotlight. They don't want the progression of the organization. And that, to me, is what's damaging a lot of these legacy organizations, y'all.
I'm thinking about something you said earlier about us not discussing these issues so that we can look more amicable within the society. I've been thinking about that since you said it, you know, how Every organization we have that's supposed to really address reparations, it's supposed to repair, it's supposed to acknowledge, repair, and all that. I think that the more we inform ourselves about it, right, the closer we get to the actual act of this country having to prepare a federal reparations packet, and what? You get your reparations, so you don't need the Urban League. You got your reparations, so now you don't need the NAACP or the Black United Front or CORE or any of those organizations, because you got we're actively repairing that relationship with this legislation over here. So do you think perhaps we're working towards the concept of the federal reparations package and then away from this idea of individualized entities tackling the parts that needs to be repaired from their different vantage points?
I got you, but hold on, Rodney. Let me get this in, then you can say whatever you want to say, because I want to build off what she's saying, and not that you were wrong in what you were saying, sis, but I wanted to build off of your point, and I agree. That was the other thing I wanted to bring up that Thomas said earlier. So, you know, when you said, brother, that we tend to try to not make other folks feel uncomfortable, that is a problem unique to us, unfortunately, because any other group doesn't care. You know, a Jew is not going to allow you to forget the Holocaust. They are not going to allow you to forget that. They will never allow you to forget that. The Japanese that were interned in this country will not allow you to forget that they were interned in this country. But black folks, for whatever reason, some of us will marginalize our position on slavery in this country, and it does us a disservice, because America should never forget. America should never forget. And it is beyond time for us to come and be compensated for that crap and move on. We can't move on because we're not allowed to move on. And we should not allow her, that being America, to ever forget it. We shouldn't. We should not. We should not put ourselves in a situation where we are marginalizing ourselves or our experiences to make other folks feel comfortable. We should, because they didn't try to make us feel free comfortable. And they did that for over 400 years. So screw them. So screw them.
Well, that means you want to be right comfortable where you are, because if you don't make those, if you don't ease, and I'm just telling you as a person actively doing it every day, if you keep your historical memory, and especially if you keep bringing it up if you bring it up, how, because they'll talk about the, this is how it plays out. All these children, these children are the black children that are in red, 2 to 3 grades behind other children. These children, they done. And I said, well, and then you say, well, you know, we only been able to learn here about a little over 100 years. It was illegal, you know, for us to even touch a book. And then after that, even after we touched the book, we wasn't allowed to use the knowledge. And then when we were able to use the knowledge, the profits from it, we had to stay in a certain region. It's just not very much motivation to be, you know, highly educated in a country that the children can see is still stratified. And then this conversation quiets, and you're that person. If you keep bringing that shit up in any kind of way, then it does not allow you a harmonious workplace. Or anything you're doing, wherever you're chilling with people who don't want to hear that shit, it's going to become icy cold, and you will be excluded, and conversations just close up when you come around. So he's right, Lee. Even if you feel like we don't deserve them the right, the pleasure of not knowing our struggle, we still have to exist as black faces in some of these white spaces. So then how do you keep your historical memory, keep your fire and passion, and still keep your paycheck rolling? You understand?
Yeah, but Rashi, so for me, I am Mr. Berry everywhere I go. And I think everyone knows what they get with Mr. Berry. They know. Even if it's on the radio and I'm joking around, they know what they're going to get. I think it's on us to not have to. We don't need to be chameleons. And I feel like that is part of the problem. We will, you know, we would almost sit and let Rodney fight the fight while we all watch 1,000 people stab him in the back. That's what we do to our leadership, to the people who speak. You know, we should, like when you do that, that's from a place of fear. And the one thing I definitely learned in the streets is that there is no good friendships that are made out of fear. There's no good allyships where that person is scared of the other person, because what happens is once they're done fearing you, they pretty much try to destroy you. And what we've done is we've allowed ourselves to move into a space where we're no longer fear. And that's only because we started talking about every other ism besides racism, so that we can fit into the bowl with everyone else. When that, we should have been the exact opposite, and we could have staked out a stronger place. And that's where we have to change. And really, I say this about young folks, and it's not because I'm saying it because I don't like our young. I love our people, but they love white people a lot more than we do. They are full on board with assimilation. I listen to the minister speak, and I'm like, what kids do you talk to, sir? What kids do you think is about to come and change this world? They ready to get out here. Listen, man, they can't wait to sleep, eat, be next. They don't care about none of that stuff you're talking about, sir. They're not, racism ain't what they worried about. They worried about, misogyny. They worry about homophobia, transphobia. Those are the things they worried about. This ain't Generation X where we were talking about racism all the time. When we're saying, oh, you selling out, that ain't it. This generation don't know what the hell. They think a sellout means you sold all the concert tickets. That's what they think a sellout is. So to me, I feel like, you know, Lee, you got a good point about not turning that back. I think that should be the code that we should institute. And, Rodney, you're right. The elected officials did some of that. But the other part of it is that if we decided that we wanted to assimilate, and I said this on Rant Radio years ago, at some point some of us need to come out instead of acting like we want to buck the system. Some of us just need to be honest and say we love white supremacy. We are okay with white people being in charge. We're okay with the conditions that are created with black folks always being at the foot. Because that is the fight we don't want to fight. I can fight with Rashi all day about black women. She can fight all day with me about black men. But we don't want to fight racism, systemic or otherwise. And that, as long as we decide to take that tack, we're going to be right where we're at.
Dolls that got trouble with. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Ryan. Go ahead.
I wanted to go back to that.
You either
going to
be one of them people or you ain't. You know what I'm saying? You guys, I'm sorry to say this, but I'm having a fantastic day, but I'm coughing really bad. I love y'all. I can't wait to talk to y'all next Saturday, but I don't think I'm going to be able to keep going without coughing. So have a fantastic day and peace.
I wanted to go back, and I hope that Sister Rashi feels better soon. What a trooper for staying on as long as she did. That passing the baton piece, I've gone through the generation of being a younger man trying to get the baton to being an older man that the younger people are at one point were looking to receive the baton from me. And to a certain extent, some may still be as a generation, not from me as an individual. And a lot of those people simply don't want the baton. They don't want my baton. And I'm talking about the baton of my generation. As a matter of fact, they even have discussions and they look down their nose. This is younger people at my particular generation, the boomer generation. They blame us and they say they don't want our baton. They'll create their own baton. And I was telling Lee a story about a young brother at an event who there was something set up specifically to demonstrate older people passing the baton down to younger people. It was specifically set up for that. But the younger person didn't want to do that. He wanted to do it his own way at an event that was not his. simply does not want my baton, and nor the baton of my generation. And I will also say that my generation, because, you know, I like to try to be as truthful as possible, didn't do the best job on preparing, which goes back to that education piece, whether it's formal or informal, on preparing our young people to receive the baton. So what I see is their batons dropping. Sometimes the baton is dropping because the old fella, which I'm getting in that category, holds on to that baton.
Nah, Rodney, you're only 21, man.
Nah, brother, these knees this week, I couldn't even go out the house and barely walk. So they didn't want the baton. The batons are dropping. Even when I try to pass the baton, young people tell me, no, I want you to do the work. I just want to tell you how to do it. Well, okay, but if I die and you don't have the scepter of power, so to speak, a symbol, then what's going to happen to you? So we could and we should have done a better job. We didn't, and this is where we are. How do we move forward collectively and in a positive way? And so I did multiple shows back in the day on Our Own Voices Live, and it was called Passing the Baton. So I do somewhat reject the notion that elders don't want to pass the baton. I think a lot in I do believe that is a part of it. But let's not forget the part of those who are up next not wanting to accept the baton and or not being prepared to run with that baton.
I would say that it's not really, I know it's only 3 minutes left, so let me get it in. It's not really on the elders to pass the baton. I think you just have to do the work, and when it's your time, you assume the mantle. No one gives it to you. Your work will shine through. The other thing that I would say, too, is that we have a generation, once again, because, you know, this conversation about NWA that was talked about, and I'm like, you know, the problem with NWA when it comes to hip-hop, NWA was the first beacon of counterculture. And it was like the very first brash version of counterculture for hip-hop. People don't like it because white people didn't like NWA. And I think that people kind of forget that. I think it's hard for some rappers and even fans of today to remember when white people didn't like the music. They didn't like X-Clan. They didn't like Boogie Down Productions or P.E. And that was because it was counterculture. I think that you can't help teach your elders and want to assimilate to say that you want to help our people. And that's just the way I look at it. So I don't think it's about the elders passing the baton. I just think you got to do the work. Ain't nobody supposed to give you nothing, man. You're supposed to go get it.
We got 60 seconds. We got to wrap. You got final thoughts, Brother Barry, since you got the mic right now?
Hey, man, all I'm saying is just go out there and get it and be focused. Go love on somebody today. That's what you need to do.
There you go. That's Lord. A chill day like today, I need me a big booty Keisha. I swear for Lord. Brother Rodney.
Today is the 100th anniversary of the Westside School, Las Vegas in Nevada, and the celebration and parade starts at 10 o'clock on West Coast time, like almost in 30 seconds.
That's what's up. Look, y'all. Thank you all for joining live. Thank you for joining later. Until next week, as we say about this time, we love you. Ain't a damn thing you can do about it.